From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 22nd day of January 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow, GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in the program, Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible will join us to discuss the agricultural weather forecast. Along the way, we'll take up a couple of issues the new Biden administration will be discussing in Washington, D.C. over the next several months. They include the RFS, climate change, ethanol, and, of course, trade. We'll do all of that right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, futures were sharply lower for the day. The March corn at $5.5, down 23 and three quarters. December at 5:30 and a quarter. That's the new crop, 18 and a half lower. March soybeans down 58 and a half cents, $13.11 and three quarters. The settlement price November, 56 and a half lower at $11.12 for the day. The bean meal down $16.60 and the bean oil $1.16 lower at $42.27. Soft red winter wheat at $6.34 and a half, down 26 and a quarter. The hard red for the day at 6:13 and a quarter, finished 22 and a half cents lower on this Friday afternoon. We're now joined by Mike Zuzlow, GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. What an ugly Friday it was in Chicago. Futures down hard. Why was that the case?
Well, I you know, Todd, I think we've talked about this where I think it's really a supply-led market. We had the January numbers come out, and it's always been strange to me that we didn't see a drop in South American bean production, Brazil specifically. We have in Argentina by USDA, and then we had DataGrow, come out, I think, Tuesday and give us almost a 136 production number in Brazil. That really raised my supply suspicions as we get ready to harvest in Brazil. And I think the other thing too is we have seen, and we talked about this, I think, on a commodity week a couple weeks ago, where one of the big indicators I was watching was the Paranagua port price for soybeans in Brazil. We had registered about $10 a ton over that at the Gulf of Mexico late last week, early this week. So I think it was a timing issue between the report and the MLK holiday, and then I think it goes back to the supply-driven market. And goodness knows we're not losing a lot of demand on the export front. Weekly export inspections for soybeans were phenomenal. The weekly export sales were phenomenal as well. Soybean meal was a marketing year high, and yet it was the leader to the downside. So I really think it's these sharp rallies that are supply-led that we can expect types of sell-offs and corrections like this. And in 2007, as we talked about before, I think we had almost a $4 sell-off and went from about $14 back to $11. And then we went up and made all-time brand new highs and went up over $16 before it was all said and done. So you have to, I think, at this point become a hedger that either sells as it goes up or sells as it goes down. And some people are comfortable one way and some of the other, but you got to stick with the program.
A big correction, in your opinion, at this time. I will ask, was there any technical damage done to the marketplace today?
Yeah, I mean, I think we took out the sharp, steepest trend line in just about everything, whether we're looking at soft red wheat, whether we're looking at soybeans, meal, and corn. The corn market looked the best, believe it or not, even though it was one of the leaders to the downside on a percentage basis, because it isn't too far away from that 502 area, and that was the weekly high from about 2 weeks ago. Looks like we're going to sell right around $5, 501. So, I mean, it looks actually the best technically, in my opinion. But the meal, it doesn't have a lot of support until you get to around 405 a ton, 408 a ton. And then if you go all the way back to the monthly soybean chart, that August 2014 high was at 1334 and a quarter, and we're going to close below that on Friday. So we're actually, you know, heading back towards a price level that if 1275, 1285, that area doesn't hold, you know, there's a trend line on the monthly chart that's pretty steep, but it goes all the way back to about $12.10. So I'm not saying this market can't keep going lower. I just think in the big picture, long term, demand is still there. Weather is still an issue, both here and in South America. And it would make sense to me that that 2007-2008 model is still a model I can utilize as I watch the Chinese African swine fever come back. That's a caveat.
Yeah, so your note to producers with grain to sell old or new crop, I suppose, is whichever you're comfortable with, lean into it a little to make sales either finishing up or starting up, either one, I suppose.
Yeah, and you know, like corn is a perfect example where I'm trying to buy back into the lead month as soon as, or excuse me, buy either old crop or new crop back into the new crop December, because I still think acreage is an issue. Fertilizer prices, I've heard, I think $60 higher in Western Illinois, $30 higher in Central Nebraska this week. Chemical prices are going up. And so I think corn acres are still a big question mark. But if you look at the futures market on Friday, we saw the December fall about 16 or 17 cents. If you would have been in a 450 or a 470, 570 call vertical in the December contract, or a 450, 550 call vertical, you'd lost a penny. You'd lost 5 cents. You'd lost eight, almost nine on the one side, and a little over three roughly on the other side. So this is the sell and defend model in action, where you are happy you made the sale and you take the loss on the known cost position, which is going to be a smaller loss than if you would have held it in the bin.
For new crop, I suppose you can probably still get $4 or darn close to it.
Yeah, and I think you could probably get real close to $11 in new crop beans if we just, you know, have a little bit of a recovery next week. And so I think I told another guy today that I think the last time I sold $12 beans, I had hair. And I make a joke about that, but let's think about how long it's been since we've sold $12 beans and not get caught up in these straight up markets. That's my vote. Yeah.
Yeah. So the other concern producers probably have, or will, if they think about it a little bit, is that we're just about, we're here on the 22nd day of January. We're just about to go into crop insurance setting month. And they'd like it to be higher rather than lower. Do you have concerns going through that month? Because it sounds to me like there might be.
I do. If we don't miss some key rains here coming up the next couple 3 weeks in Illinois and Iowa, which the models are starting to suggest that, and that would take the La Nina Bowl out of the picture for a while, and that would probably be at a bad timing, as it being in February, as you say, when that base price is factored in. And I think the other side of that goes back to, it's probably going to be fairly expensive crop insurance this year, I would guess, based upon the fact that our prices are very, very high. And I don't think we're used to paying that, because our prices have been very, very low the last 5 years. So every way I look at it, other than some of the non-GMO bean contracts I'm hearing right now are being cut in half, from $1.40, $1.50 premium a bushel down to 70, 75 cents. I heard that this week for the first time. But almost every way I cut it right now, from a cost of production standpoint and just the ease of marketing and the cost to protect the crop, it seems like soybeans are still winning the acreage battle.
Yeah, so before I let you go, I don't really want to put words into your mouth. And I suggested that you were saying cash sales either on the way up or on the way down, which you did say, but is now a time to consider that, or do you just wait?
I would say, if you were a client of mine and had not gotten caught up with the official recommendation, yes, get caught up at these price levels, but get that re-ownership on right away. And I still like being in the old crop and the beans, like the July re-ownership strategy, because I think that's where, if Brazil does have a tough crop, or we do see China continue to buy strong, or we do have weather issues, I still think old crop beans will go back to worrying about running out of carryover for old crop, and we'll have to ration that old crop bean, whereas in the corn, I'd stay in the new crop with the idea that the ethanol issue is an issue and we need acres for new crop corn.
Hey, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Todd. Have a nice weekend.
You too. Mike Zuzlow is with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Well, let's take up a couple of news items for the day. We'll discuss the RFS, ethanol, and free trade. The new Biden administration will be working through all of these. On trade policy, however, it may take some time, says Brian Keel. He's with Farmers for Free Trade.
We certainly are hopeful. We don't want to get everyone's hopes up too high, though. I think it's going to be a process. We don't expect that the Biden administration will come in and instantly lift the tariffs and everything will go back to free trade war. for, but we're hopeful that over 2021 and into 2022, we'll see a gradual thaw of some of these relationships that have got hammered pretty hard.
Now, beyond the trade war issues, Keel says Farmers for Free Trade is advocating for a return to the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement, now known as the Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership.
The other 11 countries that were part of that trade agreement, they continued on and they've set up their own trade pact without us. So we're going to have to ask them to join it. And it's unclear whether President Biden would want to join on the terms that President Obama had negotiated or whether he'd want to reopen some issues.
Other trade issues include Brexit, which Keel says should provide trade opportunity for the United States with Great Britain. However, it may complicate trade with the European Union.
The EU, by drawing these lines in the sand on things like the precautionary principle and geographic indicators, they in essence export those standards around the world. So then when we go to try to have a negotiation with another country, if they've already entered into a trade agreement with the EU, they have a standard that they want to adopt, and it makes it very difficult for us. So it's important that we make some changes on these issues.
And other matters include enforcement issues for dairy trade with Canada under the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, and reforms to the World Trade Organization while still being a member of the WTO. The other issue that the Biden administration will be working with includes ethanol and the RFS. Now, Monty Shaw, the executive director of the Iowa Renewable Fuels Association, says biofuel should be a key for inclusion in the president's plan to combat climate change.
Well, we certainly hope so and have made the case that they should be. The last 4 years got to be a little bit of a broken record with the ongoing struggles around small refiner exemptions from the RFS. And that was obviously a very, very important battle with huge implications to the biofuels industry and rural economies and the farm economy and whatnot. But it really stifled the ability to work on a lot of things that could move us forward.
And Shaw says the U.S. won't make a positive impact on the environment without biofuels.
If you want to make serious strides in decarbonizing the transportation sector in the next decade, you have to focus on biofuels. There are other technologies like EVs and others that are playing a larger role and will someday maybe play a really big role. But even in the most rosy scenarios, you're not going to have the fleet turnover fast enough for them to make an impact in the next 10 years when the scientists tell us you need to make an impact. If you really want to make an impact in the short term, you really need to double down on what is going to move liquid biofuels into the marketplace faster.
By the way, Shaw says biofuels have a veteran advocate in the new administration.
We do have Iowan as Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack, back for another tour of duty there. And so he knows this issue inside and out, was a very strong advocate for biofuels when he was Secretary of Ag during the Obama administration. So he can obviously hit the ground running and will have a very loud and clear voice inside the Biden administration.
And he says corn ethanol benefits both the climate and farmers who feed the world.
We have an alternative. And guess what? The alternative is cheaper. So why not embrace ethanol? Let's make sure farmers get their credit for the carbon sequestration techniques that they can employ. If all that happens, it could be an interesting time to kind of reboot the growth in the biofuels industry. But none of that is a given.
Again, that was Monty Shaw. He's with the Iowa Renewable Fuels Association. It's a Friday. Let's check the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass at Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Hey, happy Friday to you, Eric. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Shall we begin with this wintry system in the United States?
Yeah, sure. So right now coming through California is actually a pretty potent system, and the Californians couldn't be happier given the drought situation there. And it's going to come out of the southern plains. Now, if you like snow in Illinois, you need low pressure systems to come out of the southern plains, because then they hook over toward like southern Illinois, go over toward Indianapolis, and therefore they're south of much of central Illinois. So we're on the backside and we tend to get snow. Now, this particular system, it's missing something that I wish it had, and that would be a big dome of high pressure over Ontario. So here's the setup. If that high pressure is there, cold enough air is here, the system stays south and we get snow. And I don't know about you all, but I'd like to see a little bit of snow at some point this winter. So the system comes out, and as it moves out of Texas at the end of the weekend and then starting early next week, it is going to go to our south. But unfortunately, I think we're going to be south of I-72. I think we're going to be seeing quite a bit of rain out of this around I-72, between there and I-74, there's some chances for some freezing rain again, which I do not want any more of that, but we might see it. And then north of there, northern, you know, third, almost northern half of Illinois has a pretty good chance at seeing some heavy snow. So this system comes through and it really kicks off what could be an active end of January and beginning of February. So quite a bit different than what we had seen up to this point, which honestly has been pretty boring around here in central Illinois.
Active in what parts of the nation? So active in the East Coast doesn't mean as much to me, for instance, as active in the western part of the U.S.
Yes, and that's the important question. So the areas that I am most concerned about right now, just thinking about drought, is going to be the Southern Plains. Now, that was an area where the drought eroded. We got rid of some of it earlier in November and December. It's still very dry to the north of there, like in the Dakotas, and it's dry to the south of there in Texas over to New Mexico, Arizona, that area. One thing I'm going to be watching very carefully through this next 30 to 90 days is to see if the Southern Plains fills back in with drought. So right now, the next system that comes through misses it. The system that follows that midweek next week misses that region. And if you look over the next 10 days, the Southern Plains just have systems to their west and to their east. It's kind of like they're just getting, you know, jumped over, skipped over. And if we continue to see that happening, I don't like the end result of that, which would mean drought fills in. Now, why do I care? Because if it's there by May, that's much closer to the Corn Belt, and we just worry about that drought migrating to the east as we get into a growing season. So that's my current concern about the drought issues there. But I'll tell you something. The folks in California are going to love the next 10 days, given that they are the driest they've been in over 40 years, especially in the southern half of the state, and we're bringing moisture back into that area. So that's good.
Anything to learn from the drought monitor? By the way, that little spot in the middle of Illinois that has the deepest drought, that's Logan County.
Yeah.
That's my home county.
And unfortunately, it didn't change much, did it? And so, yeah, that's just it. The drought monitor, the one that was released yesterday, very, very little change across the country. So we didn't get rid of any of it, and we didn't add too much of it. But it's still one of those situations where it's hard to get rid of drought in winter, simply, especially in the northern plains. The soil's frozen. Snow doesn't have much liquid content in it anyway. And so we're going to have to wait till spring, I think, to really eat at that drought in the plains.
South America, what do you see there for the week?
Well, we were talking about drought. So remember, Mato Grosso, last 180 days, still the driest in 40 years.
Wow.
And they've got another drier week there as well. But we have to make sure we understand what dry means. Because when you see the models showing up, oh, it's an inch and a half of less than normal precipitation for a place like Mato Grosso, they're still going to get 3 inches of rain this week. Like, that's how the monsoon works. So it's drier north, but not detrimentally so. It is very dry east, and there's problems there. But southern Brazil, so we're thinking about the states of like Mato Grosso do Sul, Paraná, Rio Grande do Sul, and you could roughly say that that's about 50% of their soybean crop. That area getting plenty of rain. Argentina's a bit dry this week, but as I look out into week two, I see a big chunk of South America, all of it, their growing area, getting adequate rains as we move forward. So that's the wild card right now in the near term.
Any reason to think that there's a weather story yet to be written in South America at all?
Yeah, I think the weather story is just going to be the delay of getting in the safrinha crop, because they're maybe 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks behind in getting the first crop out. You know, they're already, you know, you look at the percentage of crop harvested, and we could say they're probably 8 maybe 10% behind normal, maybe more than that. So if the safrinha crop grows in late, my major concern for northern Brazil's growing areas would be if the monsoon shuts off early. That would then really be a problem for the for the safrinha crop. And I just don't have a handle on it yet to say if that is going to happen, or even to speculate on the probability of it happening. And then we just have our normal concerns for Argentina moving forward, because they have a climate very similar to what we have here in the Midwest. And so we're mid-season for them. If they have dryness late, well, we know what that can do to a crop here in the U.S., so we'll have to keep an eye on that as well. But at this point, central Brazil seems to be the spot that's getting the, not just the just-in-time rains, but the kind of rains that really help out a crop midway through.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
That is Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrient Ag Solutions and Agribal. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.